Hello, my name is Michael Turner. I'm a Buddhist Anagarika, renunciate, and teacher. Thank you for taking the time to listen to this Dharma talk. After talking with a student briefly about Tonglen, the taking and giving meditation, I was asked to go into more detail on the purpose, technique, and benefit of Tonglen as a meditation practice, and the following unscripted Dharma talk is an excerpt from what was otherwise a longer conversation. But before we get started, I would like to take a moment to talk about Tonglen. For the sake of brevity, I will assume that you already know, at least at a high level, what Tonglen is. Tonglen, the process of breathing in the pain of others and breathing out ease and comfort to send back to those who are the object of our meditation, sounds simple at face value. But Tonglen is so much more than what is typically covered and talked about by other teachers. It's even much deeper than what I talk about in this Dharma talk, mostly because what I refer to as Level 2 and Level 3 Tonglen were beyond the scope of this teaching and beyond the reach of this student. But we all have to start somewhere, and we must learn how to walk before we can learn how to run, as it were. Tonglen, when approached skillfully and correctly, can not only help us cultivate and develop our capacity of selfless and painless compassion for the plight of others, but it can also be one of the most effective techniques we can leverage when we are experiencing extended periods of our own suffering. It can help us process our pain by putting our dukkha into perspective, whether it be periods of fear and anxiety, doubt and insecurity, anger and ill will, greed and jealousy, or any of the many other forms that our suffering can take, whether it be our mental pain or our physical pain. Doing the taking and giving meditation can be very effective at easing our unwanted mental and physical states by transforming our pain into gratitude and appreciation. While that sounds like a far stretch, it's entirely attainable even with only a little practice. It forces us to approach our own experience of pain from the perspectives and feelings of others who are experiencing similarly painful feelings or conditions, many of whom are experiencing conditions and situations far worse than we are. And that has the power to pull us out of our narrow-minded perspective and free us from the self-cherishing mind and afflictive mind states that pull us down. It frees us from the negatively tainted mind that thinks I'm the only one that's suffering like this. No one else feels the way I feel. No one else is treated so unkindly like this. Because so often we take our life or our situation for granted, focusing only on a few unwanted or unfortunate circumstances. This perspective leads to negative thinking, which not only leads us down the path of sorrow, fear, anger, or resentment, but also all too often leads us to wasting the many wonderful opportunities that are available to us, but are otherwise clouded by our afflicted mind states. So it's important to recognize, appreciate, and be grateful for the fortunate circumstances that we have available to us and not to waste them. And that's another area where Tonglen can provide us with so much practical value. Tonglen diverts the grasping mind from clutching at our ego, and our ego is generally at the very center of our painful and harmful feelings and emotions. It does so by helping us cultivate selfless compassion and loving kindness for others, which is a form of compassion that, when coupled with wisdom, understands that compassion for others is truly compassion for ourselves. It has the power to do this because it serves to break down the solidity of our ego, which ultimately is often the source of so much of our suffering. It chips away at the strength of our strong sense of self and opens the doors of our compassion and love by softening the hard exterior of our heart. That is, the hard protective coating that we've slowly developed layer by layer over a lifetime of painful experiences and hurt. But Tonglen is much more than just a practice that can cultivate and develop the qualities of non-self. But it can also help us develop and mature truly genuine states of the Brahmaviharas, otherwise known as the Limitless Ones. These are the wholesome qualities deep within each and every one of us that can be cultivated limitlessly, that is, without limit, those of compassion, loving kindness, sympathetic joy, and equanimity for all sentient beings, even when faced with direct threats to our contentment and general sense of peacefulness and well-being. And anything that could do that and do it consistently, reliably, and in time easily is a very powerful practice indeed, and therefore something that's worth taking the time to explore, learn, practice, and cultivate. But don't get me wrong, we don't have to be in pain for the practice of Tonglen to be powerful and transformative. It does that all on its own when we approach it skillfully and properly. Tonglen is a practice that anyone, whether they're Buddhist or not, can learn, develop, and benefit from. But beyond all that, Tonglen can additionally be used to settle our mind before we transition into a period of mindfulness of breathing meditation. Contemplating the dukkha experienced by those less fortunate than we are can fuel our motivation to transform our own moment-to-moment adversity and discontentment into continued progress along the path. It helps us to calm and stabilize our mind and body before we meditate, which will lay a better foundation for us to observe our breath peacefully, mindfully, thereby opening the doors to deeper levels of concentration, which is ultimately the purpose of meditation. I hope you find the following Dharma talk on Tonglen to be of value to you and to your practice. And if you enjoy this teaching, please share it with others and visit beingpeacefully.com to access more of my teachings or to learn more. Now on to the talk. The practice of Tonglen can be, or it has the potential of being, tremendously powerful. It helps us slowly break down this ego shell around our core and our very center that holds ourselves as the most important sentient being on the planet, that our happiness is more important than others, that our suffering is more important than others. How that works is we literally allow other people's suffering into us, which for most of us is the opposite of what we want to do. We are trying to protect ourselves from other people's pain. When we see suffering out on the street, we keep going. We don't think about it. When we see horrible things in the news, we try not to allow it to affect us. We don't like that because at the end of the day, we're so much more concerned about ourselves. So this Tonglen does many, many, many things. But one of the most important things that it does, it allows us to, one, start breaking down this protective shell around ourselves by allowing other people's pain to come in. Now, for most people, that sounds crazy. Why would I want to do that? But in addition to starting to break down this hardened shell around us, it also starts opening up the doors of compassion. Compassion is so critical to our own happiness. Compassion for ourselves, such that we don't speak negatively or criticize or harshly to ourselves, that we set appropriate expectations for ourselves. And when we inevitably fail or trip or fall, that we respond to ourselves with compassion. Because when we start doing that, we start changing the way that we respond to our own pain. And when we start changing the way that we respond to our own pain, naturally, that means we start communicating internally in our mind with ourselves differently. Instead of saying, "Oh, I'm so stupid. Why did I do that?" We start saying things like, "Oh, look, I did it again. It's okay. I'm going to set a determination to do better next time so I don't harm myself." But when we start changing that inner dialogue, we start changing the dialogue that we use with others outside of us. We start acting more compassionately and expressing more compassionately with those around us. We also start recognizing that when other people fail, when they fall, when they trip, or when they do things that harm us or push our buttons, we just start naturally being more compassionate to them because we recognize that they're suffering and they're trying to be happy. They're doing it in really awful ways, but we start feeling compassion. So that's why this first part of Tonglen is breaking down this ego center, this shell deep within us that protects us from other people's pain. Because when we guard ourselves from other people's pain, we also guard ourselves from our own pain. We don't want even our own pain. So we have, and I'm going to throw out the mantra, the aversion to our pain. We resist our pain. We resent the source of our pain. And we're attached to our happiness. So we try and push the aversion and the resistance and the resentment. We clutch at these things that we think will make us happy because we think it's going to solve the problem, but it doesn't. So Tonglen, at a very high level, is all about saying, listen, I'm going to allow this in, but it's not just about doing it rote or mechanically, but I'll get to that. Another part of Tonglen is putting into perspective the things that bother us, the things that are the source of your impatience. So you're sitting there and you're meditating and you start feeling the twang of resistance to sitting and meditating. And that turns into discomfort in your body or your mind, which turns into impatience, which turns into breaking away from the object of your meditation, opening your eyes and looking at the time, which turns into annoyance that it's only been 3 minutes, you know? Right? And that annoyance then turns into frustration. The frustration then turns into doubt. And if you're unskillful, those things can turn into a low-level form of anger. Tonglen, when we recognize, I'm feeling impatient. Imagine the people that are sitting at home in a hot, uninsulated hut in Africa, elderly and in pain, who have medication to take, and they are waiting for their children to come back from a village that's an hour and a half away with a jug of water. That's a whole different level of impatience. Or somebody here in Merida, Mexico, who is at a doctor's office and they've got responsibilities. They've got a house to run. They've got a job to go to, but they're on public assistance healthcare. And they sit in the doctor's office for 4 or 5 hours past their appointment time before they can actually see the doctor. All the while they're in physical pain and mental pain. That's a whole different level of impatience. So another part of this whole Tonglen thing is as we breathe in other people's suffering, we're recognizing that their suffering is so much greater than ours. That even our biggest problems are little problems to billions of people on this planet. And it helps us put it into perspective. So then we realize, you know, things could be so much worse. I'll take this problem because this problem is a good problem to have. Other people have much greater problems. Like, I don't know if you're on YouTube and you watch Doug's Dharma. Part of his house burned down. His office burned down recently. And he lost all of his books and he lost all of his notes and he lost his office space. That's a big problem. That's a bigger problem than you may have right now. But you know what? Even to him, that's a little problem. He had a house to have something burned down. He had books that could get destroyed. Literally, there are billions of people on this planet that don't have any of those things. And there are a billion people on this planet, including many children, who don't have a house at all, who don't have a single book, who don't have an office. So he can practice Tonglen and recognize that he's got much to be grateful for. And for even many people in the Western world who have houses that can burn down, they don't have insurance. So if he were to sit down and do Tonglen in that period, he would be able to put it into perspective and feel so grateful. Because that's the next part of putting it into perspective when we breathe in other people's problems, is we start really feeling genuine gratitude and appreciation for our conditions. Even when they suck, we feel so grateful and appreciative. And you know what happens when you feel grateful and appreciative? It is impossible to feel anger. It is impossible to feel impatient. It is impossible to feel any kind of aversion or resistance or resentment because gratitude and appreciation are competing emotions. They're competing feelings. And when you perceive conditions around you and feel grateful for them and feel appreciative to have these things, even your problems, you cannot help but to feel safe and content and good. And that makes you want to breathe in more of other people's suffering, because now that you're feeling safe and content and good, you want other people to feel that because you've started cultivating this compassion, right? So now on your in-breath, you want to breathe in more of that suffering because you want to feel so grateful and appreciative for what you've got. And now you want to breathe out this gratitude and this comfort and this contentment and this peace of mind that you're feeling to all these other people that suffer so greatly. And that opens up your heart to compassion. And through compassion, loving kindness starts to flow. The desire for other people to be safe, the desire to other people to feel happy. And from that, altruistic joy, sympathetic joy starts to bubble up within you. Your desire to be happy for other people's happiness. And from that, equanimity starts to bubble up. Your desire to treat all sentient beings equanimously, to feel calm in the face of suffering, to feel no tension when you feel resistance coming up, to treat all sentient beings both inside your mind but outwardly, whether they're in your in-group or your out-group, with an equal amount of compassion and loving kindness and sympathetic joy. When we start doing Tonglen in a really compassionate and genuine way, these qualities, these four Brahmaviharas of loving kindness, compassion, altruistic joy, and equanimity start to get cultivated and develop within us. These are the sources of patience. Patience is the foundation of these things, but so many other things are as well. That's one part of Tonglen. This is what the benefits are. This is what the purpose of Tonglen. This is what it does for us. It helps us grow. It helps us get in touch with our compassion for ourselves, for others. It starts breaking down this cold or hardened ego center that we've naturally learned to cultivate just by being out here in the world, dealing with other people's afflicted mind states and what they do to us. And it helps us open up our hearts to other people's suffering and recognize that our suffering isn't quite so bad, that our suffering in its own way is something that we should actually be grateful for and appreciative that our suffering is so little compared to other people's. But also from a Buddhist perspective, recognizing that without suffering, there would be no need to practice meditation. Without suffering, we have no interest or need or benefit for the Dharma. That when we have just a little bit of suffering, and sometimes a lot of suffering, this suffering is what motivates us to practice, to learn, to study, to want to develop our storehouse of kindness to ourselves, of resilience in the face of challenge, of contentment in the face of things that we do not like. For meditation, to be able to calm our bodies and calm our minds so we could be more mindful and observe our mind before afflictive states can take over. To guard our mind from these things that may cause us to feel affliction within our minds. This Tonglen is super, super powerful, but only if we understand why we're doing it, only if we understand the motivation that drives us to do it, and only if we understand how to do it correctly. So we've talked a little bit about some techniques. Pick a single target, pick a large target, a group, pick a region. What works for you or what doesn't work for you is going to depend on you as a person, what you bring to the table, but also your personality. So if you find that targeting a single person, somebody that is close to you, that you care about and you know that they're suffering, or even somebody who's more distant, so there's no personal resentment or a history of pain and suffering, like somebody that you see on the street, or maybe watch some YouTube videos of people suffering and use those people, a singular person, as an object, or use a group. You know that people in Eastern Europe are suffering right now, but you know that there are countless people all over the continent of Africa that suffer tremendously. There are North Koreans. There are Middle Easterns. There are people right there in the city that you live in that suffer. So you could pick a group, or you could be more specific with a group and say, may all people who are suffering from uncontrolled anger, or the flip side of that, may all people who find themselves in relationships of domestic abuse, may all people who feel subjugated or trapped or scared, whatever works best for you. And the only way that you'll figure out what works best for you as far as your object of Tonglen is by trial and error, because it's about what makes you feel most deeply compassionate to relieve other people's suffering. Now you've picked a target. Now you understand why you want to do this, what your motivations are, what the value is to you as a person, what the value is to you as somebody who experiences afflictive mind states of the various forms of anger, greed, attachment, desire, avarice. Now you're starting to generate a true motivation, a determination to do this properly. So now it's about actually doing it. You asked me, do you have to remind yourself with each breath, both in and out? Do I have to repeat to myself this notion that I'm breathing in other people's suffering? I'm throwing my hands up because it goes back to that other thing about your object. It depends. It depends on you. So let's talk about some things that you could do. And it doesn't mean that you do one or you do the other. It's mutually exclusive. This can be a transition. And the same thing with your object. You could start with a single person and then move to a group and then move to a region and then move to a blanket statement of all people all over the world who suffer fear. And then you could take it to all people all over the world who suffer at all. And then you could include the animals, because animals feel tremendous amount of fear. All you have to do is watch a squirrel or a rabbit. They see a shadow that flies across the ground, they bolt, because that could be a bird of prey. And if a bird of prey catches any of them, that's not a great death. Animals know this. They feel tremendous fear. They scurry from one place to the next because they're afraid of dying while looking for food, for getting to their shelter, for looking for a mate. That's why the animal realm is such a horrible place. So we can also include them in our Tonglen. But again, we need to figure out where we feel that suffering is greatest. And because we interact with other human beings on such a regular basis, it's most conducive
to our contentment, to cultivating our Brahmaviharas, or as they say, another way of saying it, the limitless ones, loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity, to use humans as our targets. But when you get really good at it, let's start including animals and insects. So you can mount Tonglen on your in-breath of other people's suffering, and you can mount loving kindness back to them on your out-breath. You can do it from an intellectual, a verbal perspective, saying to yourself, I breathe in your suffering. And then you would allow, you allow it to be within your chest. And then I breathe out to you contentment. I breathe out to you peace of mind. I breathe out to you physical at ease. Or you can visualize. You know, sometimes we don't want to turn this into a thinking where we're using words. We really, for some people, that separates the object, the group of people, from our hearts. And we really want them to penetrate our heart, right? Because this is where the power is. So you can visualize. The most traditional visualization for this is to breathe in the dark black smoke of other people's suffering. As it goes into your nose and starts running down into your chest, imagine this thick cloud of black smoke funneling into a singular point, a sharp point, and it attacks that hardened shell around your heart, slowly chipping away at it like an ice pick, chipping away at a block of ice. And then as it hits that hardened shell around your heart that we've built around it to protect ourselves from other people's suffering, called our ego, it gets transformed instantly into a bright white light of love, of compassion, of kindness, of physical at ease, of mental peace of mind, of gratitude, of appreciation, of patience, of freedom from an afflictive mind state. And then we send that white smoke so soft, so bright, back to the objects. That's the most traditional way of visualizing. Now, I've modified it a little bit to make it a little bit more penetrative, but that's what I do. I take these techniques that are out there and I make them more powerful because we have decades of habits that lead us toward afflictive mind states. So we've got to really work hard to break these down. Okay, another form of visualization is not thinking about this dark smoke and this light smoke, and just recognize that other people are out there that are suffering and you simply want to breathe in that suffering. And that suffering that you breathe in, which is fear, fear is invisible. Anger is invisible. Impatience is invisible. So breathe in, just breathe in those emotions. The visualization is simply the knowledge that, you know, you're just breathing in this air and this air is filled with these tense emotions. And then on your out breath, you convert that through the loving kindness and compassion within yourself, your comfort, your ease, your gratefulness, your appreciation. And then you just breathe that ease, that comfort, that equanimity, that peacefulness, just right back out to them. And you're breathing out. It's just air. It's see-through. It's clear. It's transparent. It's invisible. Just breathe it out and just send it to them with the motivation, with the intention, with the aspiration that they receive benefit from that. And like I said, you know, we've talked about this in the past. Other people push back and say, yeah, but they're not actually benefiting. I'm not breathing in their stress and they're not going to feel any better every time I breathe out. That's not the point. Good, true. I get it. You know, and we're logical, reasonable thinking people, but it's not about them. Nothing ever is. It's important that we believe that we're breathing in this stress. We breathe in this suffering because we want to open ourselves up to other people's suffering. We want to stop closing ourselves off to it because when we close ourselves off to other people's suffering, how does that feel? We feel tight. We feel uncomfortable. We may even feel a little sad or angry. These are not good feelings. But you take a look at people who've learned how to cultivate deep compassion. Whether you're looking at me as your teacher, or you look at all of these other people that work in centers that help those who suffer, and you really see the ones who are good at it, they're happy, they're peaceful, they're positive, they're light, they're buoyant. They're not impacted in these negative ways by other people's suffering because they've learned something that the rest of the world hasn't. That true compassion doesn't mean you close yourself off when you feel that tension of other people's suffering. That's resistance. What you do is you open up your heart even more. You let that in even more. You let go of your ego that tries to protect yourself from pain. You open up your heart even more. And other people are like, are you kidding me? I'm going to feel even, I'll feel even worse. No, true compassion when coupled with wisdom is open. And the more suffering you let in, the better you feel. It's quite remarkable. In Tibetan Buddhism, they call it ultimate bodhicitta. It's difficult to explain because that's a very complex, it's not even a term, it's more of a concept. And it would take me a good hour just to crack the nut on ultimate bodhicitta. But ultimate compassion is one that is free of a self-cherishing mind, a mind that sees our own happiness and our own suffering is more important than others. So when we feel the tension of other people's suffering, we don't turn our heads and we don't close ourselves off because we try to protect ourselves. We look much more directly at it and we open ourselves up and we let go of our ego. And once you do that, that tension that you feel, it goes away. But it takes a lot of courage to get to that place in compassion. And it takes a lot of practice to get to that place in compassion. And Tonglen helps with that. Also, exposing ourselves to the suffering of others more directly helps us a lot with that. But when you've got these people, because I've known people in my life that, you know, they would donate their time and work with the homeless, and you could just see at the end of the day, they were exhausted. And even some of them would cry because they would hear a story and they would of suffering, and they would retell the story and they would just start to cry and they would feel terrible and they'd get home so exhausted and so forth. These are people who dedicate their lives to helping others who are compassionate, but they get home exhausted and in pain. And it's because their form of compassion lacks wisdom. And I hate to say that because, you know, these are dedicated, compassionate people, but they're doing it wrong. True compassion, when you get home after spending the entire day helping the homeless or helping people who suffer greatly, you should feel great. You should feel phenomenal. You should be charged with energy because of everything that you were able to do and what you experienced, and that you were there for people genuinely, mindfully, wholesomely, skillfully, with a compassionate, loving kindness that had nothing to do with yourself or you or creating pain for yourself or your ego or whatever. It was just about being there. And you get home and every day it feels rewarding. Because if it didn't, Gandhi and Mother Teresa and I wouldn't be able to do what we do. And I'm not saying that I'm Mother Teresa or Gandhi, but I've spent so much of my time working with the homeless and working with impoverished people and people who suffer so greatly. And also, because when we practice this deep level of compassion for others, we also practice it for ourselves. This Buddhism stuff, when we really do it well, it changes our lives in such amazing ways. It makes us resilient, compassionate, happy, content, appreciative, grateful. There is, you know what? I used to be board of directors. I was running sales organizations, and I was never as happy as I am now with nothing more really than my practice. But look at me. If I could go back 10, 15 years to that guy who was running sales organizations, well, he wasn't running sales organizations back then, but he was on track. He was living in Manhattan, making, you know, a good amount of money. I wish I could go back to that guy and say, hey, look, I'm you in 15 years. Look how happy I am. Because he was freaking angry. And everything that he did, he was doing to try and satisfy this thing that could never be satisfied within him. Contentment. I want to go back to him and say, dude, drop it all. Just get into this Buddhism stuff. And he was in it, but he didn't prioritize it. You know, and it wasn't until 2012 when he said, I've had enough of this. This is not making me happy. I'm going to take a gap year and travel and do some good. And finally, he had some time to actually get away from all this stuff and recognize, yeah, what he was chasing wasn't making him happy. And he started cultivating Tonglen a couple of years after that. And that's when things really started to pick up for him. Because he recognized it's not about him. Nothing is. It's not about other people either. Nothing is. The only thing that matters is the state of his mind. And now it's time that he doubled down and start finding all these techniques and these practices and these understandings and these teachings that help him understand how to observe and guard his mind and really cultivate that right effort in the Noble Eightfold Path, that right effort of recognizing when negative afflictive mind states are starting to arise and put them down, when they've arisen to put them down, and to cultivate wholesome, skillful mind states and maintain their presence. And this is Tonglen. Tonglen is such an important technique, and it doesn't get enough press and not enough people talk about it. Everybody talks about metta, and metta meditation is great. And by the way, not enough people talk about metta either. But metta is about loving kindness. It's about recognizing that all people want to be happy. It's about cultivating our own capacity to wish other people's happiness. Again, kind of knocking down our own ego, but, you know, looking at other people. But this Tonglen, it's so much more. It breaks down the barriers to our compassion. Without compassion, there is no metta. Compassion is the foundation for sympathetic joy, for genuinely being happy when other people are happy. Because how can we care about other people's happiness when we're still much more concerned about our own suffering? When we're suffering and we see other people happy, most people get upset by that. So that's why we have to work on compassion first. Equanimity, again, without compassion, the foundation for equanimity doesn't exist, because we need to start eliminating this notion of resentment. And again, without compassion for others, resentment is still a seed within us that's so easily sprouted by other people's waterings. Tonglen provides us with this capacity to really cultivate appreciation and gratitude for our conditions, good, bad, or otherwise. Metta doesn't do that. Metta is a singularly faceted practice, and it gets much more press than Tonglen. Not enough press, but much more press. Tonglen is where it's at. Tonglen is a powerful practice. It's a technique that any of us can sit down and start using today. But for as simple as people think it is, oh, I just breathe in other people's suffering, and then I breathe out, you know, peace and contentment. It's much deeper than that. And I'm not even yet scratching the surface on the complexities of where we can go with this. Because what I'm talking about is Tonglen. This is like level one Tonglen, basic level. You know, this is the kind of stuff that Pema Chodron talks about. But she only talks about it at a super, super high level. But I call that phase one. There are several other phases that we could start getting deeper and deeper into Tonglen as we start tearing down the walls of our own afflictions, tearing down the walls of our own self-cherishing mind, and tearing down the walls of this hard coating around our heart that makes us want to push away other people's suffering and push away our own suffering. I'll give you just a real short fast forward into a deep, deep level of Tonglen that I practice. Instead of breathing in other people's suffering and breathing out loving kindness, I breathe in the unsprouted seeds of other people's negative karma. And I genuinely wish and make aspirations that all of their negative karma that they experience or would otherwise experience sprout upon me instead, come to fruition upon me instead. And then, but beyond that, on my out-breath, I take all of this positive karma that I've generated, these seeds of positive karma, of helping others, you know, with the Dhamma, with Dharma, with meditation, working with the homeless, working with the impoverished, all of these people who suffer so greatly, all the things that I do that cultivate merit and plant the seeds for positive karma to come to fruition in my future, I give to them. And I don't say it because they're just words. I mean it. I genuinely will their negative karma on myself, and I genuinely give away my positive karma to them. I would never suggest that you practice that. A lot of people, when they're taking up Tonglen, they feel this sense of fear. I don't want to breathe in other people's suffering. I'm afraid that I'll start to suffer. So imagine actually breathing in and accepting other people's negative karma that's been unripe and giving away your good karma. That's deep stuff. But I've been able to cultivate this thing that's called ultimate compassion, ultimate bodhicitta. Most people will practice their entire lives and never get to this level. Not because I'm special, but simply because they don't have good teachers. They're not exposing themselves to the right lessons. They don't have somebody that's guarding their practice, that's keeping them focused or explaining their questions. They're complex. They're simple questions that have very complex answers. And also because they're not dedicating the right amount of time and effort and mindfulness and energy and determination to do this. But they say to me, you know, Michael, I'm so busy. And yet they're not so busy that they can't watch Netflix for a couple of hours. They're not busy. Because it's just like I said to you last week. If you take your 10-minute periods throughout your day, you've got 144 10-minute periods per day. So you spend 20 minutes doing Tonglen. That's two periods. You've got 142 periods now to mess around with the rest of your day. That 20 minutes of Tonglen can change your life. Nobody's too busy for the Dharma. Nobody's too busy for meditation. Nobody's too busy to practice. But they're also not too busy to come up with more than enough excuses on why they're too busy. We need to start chipping away at the hardened shell around our ego, around our heart. It doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen over a year. It takes years, years to get there. But the nice thing is when you start cultivating these deeper levels of compassion and you start letting go of your self-cherishing mind and your ego, guess what starts happening? You start making real progress towards stream entry. And the closer you get to stream entry, the stronger your compassion is. But it's really not like that. The stronger your compassion, the closer you get to stream entry. The stronger your gratitude and your appreciation for your afflictions, for your suffering, the closer you get to stream entry. The stronger your capacity for all of these Brahma Viharas and for recognizing that other people are simply trying to be happy and free of suffering, and they go about it in ways that are destructive to themselves and to those around them, and they become sources of your compassion, get closer to stream entry. And then you just get to this point. You're thinking about this. You're feeling compassionate. You're seeing somebody suffer. You're putting things into perspective, and boom, the final synaptic connection wires your brain. And you get rebooted, and now you're a stream enter. And it just becomes easier to start cultivating this even more. Because now your resistance, your resentment, your attachments, your aversion, they become weaker. So then practice starts kicking off all the more. And that's another reason why having good teachers are so important, so critical to the path. I don't think there's a single question that you've asked me in the 18 sessions that we've had that I didn't have a deep answer for. And I'm not saying I know everything, but sooner or later, you're going to ask me a question. I'm going to be like, yo, dude, I don't know. And I'll tell you that. But you ask me these simple questions and they go on forever because you need more information if you're going to continue to cultivate a straight and relatively direct path to what you're trying to do. So Tom Glenn, you asked me, what is this? What's the technique? What's the purpose? So I've been speaking on this and we've barely scratched the surface. But I think this is a good place for me to kind of stop and ask you questions and have you ask me questions. And let's dig a little bit deeper into this. But I hope that this overview of Tonglen was clear and helpful to you. Good. I hope this session was helpful for you. We talked a lot about Tonglen. We talked about what the purpose is of breaking down that shell around you, to opening yourself up to other people's suffering, which helps you open yourself up to your own suffering. When you feel that tension, it's not about closing off. Closing off is exactly what we're trying to keep you from doing with this practice. Open yourself up even more. If you start feeling the pain of other people's suffering, recognize in that moment that pain is coming from the self-cherishing, your attachment to your own happiness. Work on letting that go and breathe in other people's suffering. Pick an object. Is it one person? Is it a group? Is it a stranger? Is it a region? Is it a class of people? Find out what works best for you. Think about mounting other people's suffering on your in-breath and mounting ease and comfort back. Or try visualizing. You could visualize the dark smoke that comes into a singular point that starts chipping away, breathing out white smoke. Or you could just recognize you're breathing in air, but you're breathing in stressful air, suffering air, painful air. And you're converting that inside, recognizing that you aren't suffering. So you have a lot to be grateful and appreciative for. And that gratefulness and appreciation start opening yourself up. And then breathe some of that ease that you've got back in clear air. Keep meditating, keep practicing, recognizing where your motivations are coming from and set the determination to be effortful. Anyway, that was a little bit of a recap. Keep up your practice and we'll talk next week.
Hello, my name is Michael Turner and I'm a Buddhist Anagarika and pre-monastic teacher of Applied Dharma. If you enjoyed this Dharma talk and would like me to be your teacher, or if you would like to be notified of new talks when they are posted, please visit my website at beingpeacefully.com to contact me, subscribe, or learn more.